Chapter 36. A New Name. For a long time Elaine sat there watching Birgitta sleep. It did seem to be sleep. Once she stirred, muttering in a desperate voice, "Wait for me, Gadel. Wait. I'm coming, Gadel. Wait for—" Words trailed off into slow breath again. Was it stronger? The woman still looked deathly ill, better than she had, but pale and drawn. After perhaps an hour, Nynaeve returned, her feet dirty. Fresh tears shone on her cheeks. "I could not stay away," she said, hanging her cloak back on its peg. "You sleep. I will watch her. I have to watch her." Elaine rose slowly, smoothing her skirts. Perhaps watching over Birgitta for a time would help Nynaeve work matters out. "I don't feel like sleeping yet either." She was exhausted, but not sleepy any longer. "I think I will stroll outside myself." Nynaeve only nodded as she took Elaine's place on the bed, her dusty feet dangling over the side, her eyes fastened to Birgitta. To Elaine's surprise, Tom and Julin were not asleep either. They had built a small fire beside the wagon and sat on either side of it, cross-legged on the ground, smoking their long-stemmed pipes. Tom had tucked his shirt in and Julin had donned his coat, though no shirt, and turned the cuffs back. She took a look around before joining them. No one stirred in the camp, dark except for the light of this one fire and the glow of the lamps from their wagon's windows. Neither man said anything while she settled her skirts. Then Julin looked at Tom, who nodded, and the thief-catcher took something from the ground and held it out to her. "I found it where she was lying," the dark man said, as if it had dropped from her hand. Elaine took the silver arrow slowly. Even the fletching feathers appeared to be silver. "Distinctive," Tom said conversationally around his pipe. "And added to the braid. Every story mentions the braid for some reason, though I've found some I think might be her under other names without it, and some under other names with." "I do not care about stories," Julin put in. He sounded no more agitated than Tom, but then it took a great deal to agitate either one of them. "Is it her? Bad enough if it isn't, a woman appearing naked out of nothing like that, but what have you gotten us into, you and Nana? He was troubled. Julin did not make mistakes, and his tongue never slipped. Tom merely bubbled at his pipe, waiting. Elaine turned the arrow in her hands, pretending to study it. "She is a friend," she said finally. "Until, unless Birgitta released her, her promise held. She is not Aes Sedai, but she has been helping us." They looked at her, waiting for her to say more. "Why didn't you give this to Nynaeve?" One of those glances passed between them. Men seem to carry on entire conversations through glances, around women at least, saying as clearly as spoken words what they thought of her keeping secrets, especially when they all but knew for certain already. But she had given her word. "She seemed upset," Julin said, sucking at his pipe judiciously, and Tom took his from between his teeth and blew out his white mustaches. "Upset? The woman came out in her shift looking lost, and when I asked if I could help her, she didn't snap my head off. She cried on my shoulder." He plucked at his linen shirt, muttering something about dampness. "Elaine, she apologized for every cross word she has ever said to me, which is very nearly every other word out of her mouth. Said she ought to be switched, or maybe that she had been. She was incoherent half the time. She said she was a coward and a stubborn fool. I don't know what is the matter with her, but she isn't herself by a mile." "I knew a woman who behaved like this once," Julin said, peering into the fire. "She woke to find a burglar in her bedchamber and stabbed the man through the heart. Only when she lit a lamp, it was her husband. His boat had come back to the docks early. She walked around like Nynaeve for half a month." His mouth tightened. "Then she hanged herself." "I hate to lay this burden on you, child," Tom added gently. "But if she can be helped, you are the only one of us who can do it. I know how to take a man out of his miseries. Give him a swift kick, or else get him drunk and find him a—" He harrumphed loudly, trying to make it seem a cough, and knuckled his mustaches. The one bad thing about him seeing her as a daughter was that now sometimes he seemed to think she was perhaps 12. Anyway, the point is that I do not know how to do this, and while Julin might be willing to dandle her on his knee, I doubt she'd thank him for it. I would sooner dandle a fangfish, the thief-catcher muttered, but not as roughly as he would have yesterday. He was as concerned as Tom, though less willing to admit it. I will do what I can, she assured them, turning the arrow again. They were good men, and she did not like lying to them or hiding things from them. Not unless it was absolutely necessary, anyway. Nynaeve claimed that you had to manage men for their own good, but there was such a thing as taking it too far. It was not right to lead a man into dangers he knew nothing of. So she told them. About Telairan Riad and the Forsaken being loose. About Mogadin. Not quite everything, of course. Some events in Tanchico had been too shaming for her to want to think of them. Her promise held her concerning Birgitta's identity, and there was certainly no need to go into detail about what Mogadin had done to Nynaeve. It made explaining this night's happenings a little difficult, yet she managed. She did tell them everything she thought they should know, enough to make them aware for the first time what they were really up against. Not just the Black Aja. That had certainly made them stare cross-eyed when they learned it. But the Forsaken, and one of them very likely hunting her and Nynaeve. And she made it quite plain that they too would be hunting Mogadin as well, and that anyone close to them was in danger of being caught between hunter and prey either way. Now that you know, she finished, the choice to stay or go is yours. She left it at that, and was careful not to look at Tom. She hoped almost desperately that he would stay, but she would not let him think that she was asking, not by so much as a glance. "I haven't taught you half what you need to know if you're to be as good a queen as your mother," he said, trying to sound gruff and spoiling it by brushing a strand of black-dyed hair from her cheek with a gnarled finger. "You'll not rid yourself of me this easily, child. I mean to see you mistress of Desdemar if I must drone in your ear until you go deaf. I haven't even taught you to handle a knife. I tried to teach your mother, but she always said she could tell a man to use a knife if one needed using. Fool way to look at it." She leaned forward and kissed his leathery cheek, and he blinked, bushy eyebrows shooting up, then smiled and stuck his pipe back into his mouth. "You can kiss me, too," Julin said dryly. "Randall Thor will have my guts for fish bait if I don't hand you back to him in the same health he last saw you." Elaine lifted her chin. "I will not have you stay for Randall Thor, Julin." "Hand her back, indeed. You will stay only if you want to, and I do not release you, or you, Tom," he had grinned at the thief-catcher's comment, "from your promise to do as you were told." Tom's startled look was quite satisfying. She turned back to Julin. "You will follow me, and Nynaeve, of course, knowing full well the enemies we face, or you may pack your belongings and ride Skulker where you wish. I will give him to you." Julin sat up straight as a post, his dark face going darker. "I have never abandoned a woman in danger in my life." He pointed his pipe stem at her like a weapon. "You send me away, and I will be on your heels like a soarer on a stern chase." Not exactly what she wanted, but it would do. "Very well, then." Rising, she held herself erect, the silver arrow at her side, and kept her slightly frosty manner. She thought they had finally realized who was in charge. "Morning is not far off." Had Rand actually had the nerve to tell Julin to hand her back? Tom would just have to suffer along with the other man for a time, and it served him right for that grin. "You will put out this fire and go to sleep. Now. No excuses, Tom. You'll be no good at all tomorrow without sleep." Obediently, they began scuffing dirt over the flames with their boots, but when she reached the plain wooden steps of the wagon, she heard Tom say, "Sounds like her mother sometimes." "Then I am glad I have never met the woman," Julin grumbled in reply. "Flip for first guard?" Tom murmured an assent. She almost went back, but found herself smiling instead. Men. It was a fond thought. Her good mood lasted until she was inside. Nynaeve sat on the very edge of the bed, holding herself up with both hands, eyes trying to drift shut as she watched Birgitta. Her feet were still dirty. Elaine put Birgitta's arrow into one of the cupboards behind some rough sacks of dried peas. Luckily, the other woman never so much as glanced at her. She did not think the sight of the silver arrow was what Nynaeve needed right at that moment, but what was? "Nynaeve, it is past time for you to wash your feet and go to sleep." Nynaeve swayed in her direction, blinking sleepily. "Feet? What? I must watch her." It would have to be one step at a time. "Your feet, Nynaeve, they are dirty. Wash them." Frowning, Nynaeve peered down at her dusty feet, then nodded. She spilled water, tipping the big white pitcher over the wash basin, and sloshed more out before she was washed and ready to towel dry, but even then she resumed her seat. "I must watch, in case... She cried out once, "For Gadel." Elaine pressed her back on the mattress. "You need sleep, Nynaeve. You can't keep your eyes open." "I can," Nynaeve muttered sullenly, trying to sit up against Elaine's pressure on her shoulders. "I must watch her, Elaine. I must." Nynaeve made the two men outside look sensible and biddable. Even if Elaine had had a mind to, there was no way to get her drunk and find her a pretty young man, she supposed it would have to be. That left a swift kick. Sympathy and common sense had surely made no impression. "I have had enough of this sulking and self-pity, Nynaeve," she said firmly. "You are going to sleep now, and in the morning you are not going to say one word about what a miserable wretch you are. If you cannot behave like the clear-headed woman you are, I will ask Sarandon to give you 2 black eyes for the one I took away. You did not even thank me for that. Now go to sleep." Nynaeve's eyes widened indignantly. At least she did not look on the point of tears, but Elaine slid them shut with her fingers. They closed easily, and despite softly murmured protests, the deep, slow breath of sleep followed quickly. Elaine patted Nynaeve's shoulder before straightening. She hoped it was a peaceful sleep with dreams of Lan, but any sort of sleep was better for her now than none. Fighting a yawn, she bent to check Birgitta. She could not tell whether the woman's color or breathing was any better. There was nothing to do but wait and hope. The lamps did not seem to be bothering either of the women, so she left them alight and sat on the floor between the beds. They should help keep her awake. Not that she knew why she should remain awake, really. She had done what she could, as much as Nynaeve had. Unthinkingly, she leaned back against the front wall, and her chin sank slowly to her chest. The dream was a pleasant one, if odd. Rand knelt before her, and she put a hand on his head and bonded him as her warder. One of her warders. She would have to choose green now, with Birgitta. There were other women there, faces changing between one glance and the next. Nynaeve, Min, Moiraine, Avienda, Berylaine, Amathera, Leandrin, others she did not know. Whoever they were, she knew that she had to share him with them, because in the dream she was certain that that was what Min had viewed. She was not sure how she felt about that. Some of those faces she wanted to claw to shreds, but if it was fated by the pattern, it would have to be. Yet she would have one thing of him the others could never have, the bond between warder and Aes Sedai. "Where is this place?" Berylaine said, raven-haired and so beautiful that Elaine wanted to bare her teeth. The woman wore the low-cut red dress that Luca wanted Nynaeve to wear. She always dressed revealingly. "Wake up! This is not Telairun Riod." Elaine started awake to find Birgitta leaning over the side of the bed, gripping her arm weakly. Her face was too pale and damp with sweat as if a fever had broken, but her blue eyes were sharp and intent on Elaine's face. "This is not Telairun Riod." It was not a question, but Elaine nodded, and Birgitta sank back with a long sigh. "I remember everything," she whispered. "I am here as I am, and I remember. All is changed. Gadel is out there somewhere, an infant, or even a young boy. But even if I find him, what will he think of a woman more than old enough to be his mother?" She scrubbed angrily at her eyes, muttering, "I do not cry. I never cry. I remember that the light helped me. I never cry. Elaine got up on her knees beside the woman's bed. You will find him, Birgitta. She kept her voice low. Nynaeve still seemed sound asleep. A small, rasping snore rose from her regularly, but she needed rest, not to confront this all over again now. Somehow you will, and he will love you. I know he will. Do you think that is what matters? I could stand him not loving me. Her glistening eyes gave her the lie. He will need me, Elaine, and I will not be there. He always has more courage than is good for him. I always must supply him with caution. Worse, he will wander, searching for me, not knowing what he is looking for, not knowing why he feels incomplete. We are always together, Elaine, two halves of a whole. The tears welled up, flowing across her face. Mogadine said she would make me cry forever, and she... Suddenly her features contorted. Low, ragged sobs came as if ripped from her throat. Elaine gathered the taller woman into her arms, murmuring words of comfort she knew were useless. How would she feel if Rand were taken away from her? The thought was nearly enough to make her put her head down atop Birgitta's and join her weeping. She was not sure how long it took Birgitta to cry herself out, but eventually she pushed Elaine away and settled back, wiping her cheeks with her fingers. I have never done that except as a small child. Never. Twisting her neck, she frowned at Nynaeve, still asleep on the other bed. Did Mogadine hurt her badly? I have not seen anyone trust like that since the Tuareg took Marish. Elaine must have looked confused, because she added, in another age, is she hurt? Not badly. Her spirit, mainly. What you did allowed her to escape, but only after... Elaine could not make herself say it. Too many wounds were too fresh. She blames herself. She thinks that everything is her fault for asking you to help. If she had not asked me, Mogadine would be teaching her to beg right now. She has as little caution as Gadel. Birgitta's dry tone sounded odd with her wet cheeks. She did not drag me into this by my hair. If she claims responsibility for the consequences, then she claims responsibility for my actions. If anything, she sounded angry. I am a free woman, and I made my own choices. She did not decide for me. I must say you are taking this better than I would. She could not say better than Nynaeve. That was true, but the other was as well. I always say, if you must mount the gallows, give a jest to the crowd, a coin to the hangman, and make the drop with a smile on your lips. Birgitta's smile was grim. Mogadine sprang the trap, but my neck is not yet snapped. Perhaps I will surprise her before it is done. The smile faded into a frown as she studied Elaine. I can feel you. I think I could close my eyes and point to you a mile away. Elaine took a very deep breath. I bonded you as a warder, she said in a rush. You were dying, and healing did no good, and... The woman was looking at her, not frowning any more, but her eyes were disconcertingly sharp. There was no other choice, Birgitta. You would have died else. A warder, Birgitta said slowly. I think I remember hearing a tale of a female warder, but it was in a life so long ago that I cannot remember more than that. It was time for another deep breath, and this time she had to force the words. There is something you should know. You will discover it sooner or later, and I've decided not to keep things from people who have a right to know, not unless I absolutely must. A third breath. I'm not Aes Sedai. I'm only accepted. For a long moment, the golden-braided woman stared up at her, then slowly shook her head. Unaccepted. In the Trolloc Wars, I knew an accepted who bonded a fellow. Barashel was due to be tested the next day for raising to full Aes Sedai, and certain to be given the shawl, but she was afraid that a woman testing that same day would take him. In the Trolloc Wars, the Tower tried to raise women as quickly as possible, from necessity. What happened? Elaine could not stop herself from asking. Barashel? That name sounded familiar. Lacing her fingers over the blanket atop her bosom, Brigitta shifted her head on the pillow and put on a look of mock sympathy. Needless to say, she was not allowed to take the tests once it was discovered. Necessity did not outweigh such an offense. They made her pass the poor fellow's bond to another, and to teach her patience, put her into the kitchens among the scullions and spitgirls. I heard that she stayed there 3 years, and when she did receive her shawl, the Ammerlin Seat herself chose her warder, a leather-faced, stone-stubborn man named Anselan. I saw them a few years after, and I could not tell which of them gave the commands. I do not think Baruchel was certain either. Not pleasant, Elaine muttered. 3 years in the... Wait. Baruchel and Anselan? It could not be the same pair. That story said nothing about Baruchel being Aes Sedai. But she had read two versions and heard Tom tell another, and all had Baruchel doing some long, arduous service to earn Anselan's love. 2,000 years could change a great deal in a story. Not pleasant, Brigitta agreed, and suddenly her eyes were much too large and innocent in her pale face. I suppose, since you wish me to keep your dreadful secret, you will not ride me as hard as some Aes Sedai ride their warders. It would not do to push me to tell just to escape you. Elaine's chin came up instinctively. That sounds very like a threat. I do not take well to threats from you or anyone else. If you think... The reclining woman caught her arm and cut her off apologetically. Her grip was noticeably stronger. Please... I did not intend it that way. Gadol claims I have a sense of humor like a rock tossed into a shoja circle. A cloud swept across her face at Gadol's name and was gone. You saved my life, daughter heir of Andor. I will keep your secret and serve you as warder, and be your friend if you will have me. I will be proud to have you for friend. Shoja circle? She would ask another time. Brigitta might be stronger, but she needed rest, not questions. And for warder. It seemed that she really was going to choose the green Aja. Aside from everything else, that was the only way she could bond Rand. The dream was still clear in her mind, and she intended to convince him to accept it one way or another. Perhaps you could try to moderate your sense of humor? I will try. Brigitta sounded as if she were saying she would try to pick up a mountain. But if I am to be your warder, even in secret, then I will be warder to you. You can barely hold your eyes open. It is time for you to sleep. Elaine's eyebrows and chin shot up together, but the woman gave her no opportunity to speak. Among many other things, it is a warder's place to tell her Aes Sedai when she pushes herself too hard. Also to provide a dose of caution when she thinks she can walk into the pit of doom, and to keep her alive so she can do what she must. I will do these things for you. Never fear for your back when I am near, Elaine. She did need sleep, she supposed, but Brigitta needed it more. Elaine dimmed the lamps and got the woman settled and asleep, though not until Brigitta had seen her put a pillow and blankets on the floor between the beds for herself. There was some slight argument over who would sleep on the floor, but Brigitta was still weak enough that Elaine had no trouble making her stay in the bed. Well, not very much, anyway. At least Nynaeve's soft snore never broke. She herself did not go to sleep immediately, whatever she had told Brigitta. The woman could not put her nose outside the wagon until she had something to wear, and she was taller than Elaine or Nynaeve. Sitting down between the beds, Elaine began letting out the hem on her dark gray silk riding dress. There would hardly be time in the morning for more than a quick fitting and stitching the new hem. Sleep overtook her with her ripping no more than half done. She had the dream of bonding Rand again, more than once. Sometimes he knelt voluntarily, and sometimes she had to do what she had done with Brigitta, even sneaking into his bedchamber while he slept. Brigitta was one of the other women now. Elaine did not mind that too much. Not her, or Min, or Egwene, or Avienda, or Nynaeve, though she could not imagine what Lan would say to that last. Others, though. She had just ordered Brigitta in a warder's color-shifting cloak to drag Berylaine and Elida to the kitchens for 3 years, when suddenly the two women began pummeling her. She awakened to find Nynaeve trampling her to reach Brigitta and check on the woman. The grey light just before dawn showed in the small windows. Brigitta woke claiming she was as strong as ever, and ravenous besides. Elaine was not certain whether Nynaeve had finished her bout of self-blame. She did not wring her hands or speak of it, but while Elaine washed her face and hands and explained about the menagerie and why they had to remain with it a while longer, Nynaeve hastily peeled and cored red pears and yellow apples, sliced cheese, and handed it all to Brigitta on a plate with a cup of watered wine with honey and spices. She would have fed the woman had Brigitta let her. Nynaeve washed Brigitta's hair in white hen pepper herself until it was as black as Elaine's. Elaine did her own, of course, donated her best stockings and shift, and looked disappointed when a pair of Elaine's slippers fit better. She insisted on helping Brigitta into the grey silk as soon as her hair had been toweled dry and braided again. The hips and bosom needed letting out, too, but that would have to wait, and even wanted to stitch the hem herself, until Elaine's incredulous stare made her retreat to her own ablutions, muttering as she scrubbed her face that she could sew as well as anyone, when she wanted to. When they went outside at last, the first sharp golden edge of the sun was peeking above the trees to the east. For this little while the day felt deceptively comfortable. There was not a cloud to be seen in the sky, and by noon the air would be hot and gritty. Tom and Julin were hitching the team to the wagon, and the whole camp bustled in preparation for moving. Skulker was already saddled, and Elaine made a note to herself to speak up about riding today herself before one of the men took possession of the saddle. Even if Tom or Julin got there first, though, she would not be too disappointed. This very afternoon she would high-walk in front of people for the first time. The costume Luca had shown her made her a little nervous, but at least she was not moaning about it as Nynaeve did. Luca himself came striding rapidly through the camp, red cloak fluttering behind, chivying and shouting unneeded instructions. "Latel, wake those bloody bears. I want them on their feet, snarling when we drive through Samara. Clarine, you watch those dogs this time. If one of them goes chasing after a cat again, Brug, you and your brothers do your tumbling just ahead of my wagon, mind. Just ahead. This is supposed to be a stately procession, not a race to see which of you can backflip the fastest. Sarandon, keep those boar horses in hand. I want people to gasp in amazement, not run in terror." He stopped at their wagon, glowering at Nynaeve and herself equally, with a bit left over for Brigitta. "Kind of you to decide to come with the rest of us, Mistress Nana, my lady Morellin. I thought you meant to sleep until midday." He nodded toward Brigitta. "Having a chat with someone from across the river, are you? Well, we've no time for visitors. I mean to be set up and performing by noon." Nynaeve looked taken aback by the onslaught, but by the end of his second sentence she was meeting him glare for glare. Whatever her awkwardness toward Brigitta, it apparently did not hinder her temper where others were concerned. "We will be ready as soon as anyone, and you know it, Valen Luca. Besides, an hour or two will make no difference anyway. There are enough people gathered on the other side of the river that if 1 in 100 comes to your show, it will be more than you ever dreamed. If we decide to make a leisurely breakfast, you can just twiddle your thumbs and wait. You'll not get what you want if you leave us behind." That was her bluntest reminder yet of the promised 100 gold marks, but for once it did not slow him. "Enough people? Enough people? People must be attracted, woman. Chin Akima has been in place 3 days, and he has a fellow who juggles swords and axes. And 9 acrobats. 9! Some woman I've never heard of has 2 women acrobats who do things on a hanging rope that would make the Chavana's eyes pop. You would not believe the crowds. Cilia Serrano has men with their faces painted like court fools splashing each other with water and hitting each other over the head with bladders, and people are paying an extra silver penny just to watch." Suddenly his eyes narrowed, focusing on Brigitta. "Would you be willing to paint your face? Cilia doesn't have a woman among her fools. Some of the horse handlers would be willing. It doesn't hurt getting hit with an inflated bladder, and I will pay you..." He trailed off, musing. He did not like parting with money any more than Nynaeve did, and Brigitta spoke into his momentary silence. "I am not a fool, and will not be a fool. I am an archer." "An archer," he muttered, eyeing the intricate glossy black braid pulled over her left shoulder. "And I suppose you call yourself Brigitta. What are you? One of those idiots hunting the Horn of Valyr? Even if the thing exists, what chance any one of you will find it more than another? I was in Ilion when the hunter's oaths were given, and there were thousands in the great square of Tamaz. But for glory that you can attain, nothing can outshine the applause of—" "I am an archer, pretty man," Brigitta broke in firmly. "Fetch a bow, and I will outshoot you or anyone you name. 100 crowns gold to your one." Elaine expected Nynaeve to yelp. It was they who would have to cover the wager if Brigitta lost, and whatever she claimed, Elaine did not think Brigitta could be fully recovered already. Yet all Nynaeve did was close her eyes briefly and draw a deep, long breath. "Women," Luca growled. Tom and Julin did not have to look as if they agreed. "You are a fine match for the Lady Morellon and Nana, or whatever their names are." He swept his silk cloak in a wide gesture at the surrounding hustle of men and horses. "It may have escaped your keen eye, Brigitta, but I have a show to get underway, and my rivals are already draining Samara of coin like the cut purses they are." Brigitta smiled, a slight curving of her lips. "Are you afraid, pretty man? We can make your side a silver penny." Elaine thought Luca might have apoplexy from the color that crept into his face. His neck suddenly looked too big for his collar. "I will fetch my bow," he almost hissed. "You can work off the 100 marks with your face painted or cleaning cages for all I care."
"Are you sure that you are well enough?"
Elaine asked Brigitta as he stalked off, muttering to himself. The only word she caught was a repeat of "women." Nynaeve was looking at the woman with the braid as if she wanted the ground to open and swallow her. Herself, not Brigitta. A number of the horse handlers had gathered around Tom and Julin for some reason.
"He has nice legs," Brigitta said, "but I have never liked tall men. Add a pretty face and they are always insufferable."
Petra had joined the group of men, twice as wide as any other. He said something, then shook hands with Tom. The Chavanas were there as well, and Latel, talking earnestly with Tom while darting dark looks at Nynaeve and the two women with her. By the time Luca returned with an unstrung bow and a quiver of arrows, no one was making preparations any longer. The wagons and horses and cages, even the tethered boar horses, stood abandoned, the people all clustered around Tom and the thief catcher. They followed as Luca led the way a short distance out of the camp. "I am accounted a fair shot," he said, carving a white cross chest high to himself on the trunk of a tall oak. He had some of his jauntiness back, and he swaggered as he strode off 50 paces. "I will take the first shot so you can see what you face." Brigitta plucked the bow from his hand and walked off another 50 as he stared after her. She shook her head over the bow, but braced it on her slippered foot and strung it in one smooth motion before Luca joined her and Elaine and Nynaeve. Brigitta pulled an arrow from the quiver he held, examined it a moment, then tossed it aside like rubbish. Luca frowned and opened his mouth, but she was already discarding a second shaft. The next 3 went to the leaf-covered ground as well before she stuck one point down in the soil beside her. Of 21, she kept only 4.
"She can do it," Elaine whispered, trying to sound certain. Nynaeve nodded bleakly.
If they had to pay out 100 gold crowns, they would soon be selling the jewelry Amathera had given them. The letters of rights were all but useless, as she had explained to Nynaeve. Their use would eventually point a finger to where they had been for Elida, if not where they were.
"If I had just spoken up in time, I could have stopped this. As my warder, she has to do as I say, doesn't she?"
From the evidence so far, obedience was no part of the bond. Had those Aes Sedai she had spied on made the men give oaths as well? Now that she thought of it, she believed one of them had.
Birgitta knocked an arrow, raised the bow, and loosed seemingly without pausing to aim. Elaine winced, but the steel point struck dead center in the middle of the carved white cross. Before it stopped quivering, the second brushed in beside it. Birgitta did wait a moment then, but only for the two arrows to still. A gasp rose from the onlookers as the third shaft split the first, but that was nothing to the absolute silence as the last split the other just as neatly. Once could have been chance. Twice. Luca looked as if his eyes were coming out of his head. Mouth hanging open, he stared at the tree, then at Birgitta, at the tree, then Birgitta. She proffered the bow, and he shook his head weakly. Suddenly he flung the quiver away, spreading his arms wide with a glad cry. "Not knives! Arrows! From 100 paces!" Nynaeve sagged against Elaine as the man explained what he wanted, but she made not one sound of protest. Tom and Julin were collecting money. Most handed over coins with a sigh or a laugh, but Julin had to snag Latell's arm as she tried to slip away and speak some angry words before she dug coins from her pouch. So that was what they had been up to. She would have to speak to them firmly, but later. "Nana, you don't have to go through with this." The woman only stared at Birgitta, eyes haggard. "Our wager?" Birgitta said when Luca ran out of wind. He grimaced, then fished slowly into his pouch and tossed her a coin. Elaine caught the glint of gold in the sun as Birgitta examined it, then tossed it right back. "The bet was a silver penny on your part." Luca's eyes widened in startlement, but the next moment he was laughing and pressing the gold crown into her hand. "You are worth every copper of it. What do you say? Why, the Queen of Gildan herself might come to see a performance such as yours. Birgitta and her arrows. We will paint them silver, and the bow." Desperately, Elaine wanted Birgitta to look at her. They might as well put up a sign for Mogadine as do what the man suggested. But Birgitta only bounced the coin on her hand, grinning. "Paint will ruin an already shabby bow," she said finally. "And call me Marion. I was called that once." Leaning on the bow, she let her smile widen. "Can I have the red dress, too?" Elaine heaved a sigh of fervent relief. Nynaeve looked as if she were going to sick up.